Welcome to the Northeast Christian Podcast. We're so excited that you've decided to check out our weekly messages. We hope that you're challenged and inspired by what you're hearing today. We'd love to have you join us this weekend at one of our campuses or online at northeast.live. For more information on Northeast, visit us at necchurch.org. If you love the Northeast Podcast, subscribe to our channel and leave us a comment or a rating in the Apple Podcast Store. This weekend's message is from Tyler McKenzie. He's the lead pastor here at Northeast.
Well, yes, as you saw there on the video, this coming up week's Christmas. I mean, like, Christmas Eve services start this Thursday, and I just want to remind you, especially Northeast stakeholders here, there is no better time of the year to invite a friend to church than during the Christmas season. One, we are going to have our best foot forward that day, and we are going to tell the greatest story ever told in a really simple and compelling way. But two, during the Christmas season, it's particularly the case in Louisville, people are more likely to accept an invitation to church any other time of the year. So invite friends, invite family, invite your coworkers, people you serve in your neighborhood, people that you serve in the city. Invite them, bring them, and I promise you they'll have a good experience. Now, second off, I also want to tell you that Christmas Eve is traditionally the time when we collect our big Christmas Eve offering. Right? Everything you heard Melinda just say there, all the round of applause and all those international global outreach partnerships, that is not possible without the generosity of this church. You made every single one of those stories possible last year in Christmas Eve 2017 because of the generosity of this church. And we want to go to the next level this year. So we collected 800K last year. We want to beat that this year. I'd love to see us reach $1 million. And as of right now, we're nowhere close. But okay, so I'm not nervous or anything because I know you guys. But I just want to remind you on Christmas Eve, bring those in. Just make sure that you designate any of your gifts to our outreach initiatives, the Eve Fund, Christmas Eve Fund. Lastly, we're going to have thousands of visitors at any one of our seven services. So if you are available to serve, starting on Thursday night and all the way through Monday, any single one of those, then we would love you. We would love for you to support us in that way. Help us make this environment as hospitable as possible because this will be some people's first experience of church ever or first experience of church in a really, really long time. Reminder for you, first service is on Thursday, 6:30 p.m. That's to catch all you out-of-towners. Then we have our regularly scheduled times on the weekend, and then three on Christmas Eve. Any questions? Okay, good. Now, let's get down to business. Today, I get to continue part two of a series that we started last week called Prayers of the Ville, a series that's addressing the real prayers of our community during the Christmas season. And the reason why we know these are the prayers of our community is because we asked and you responded. Last week we walked through a prayer for belief because we know that there are hundreds of people in our community who have loved ones who are struggling to find faith or who have walked away from church or who just aren't certain about Jesus. And I have found personally that Christmas time can be an amazing time to renew your faith. Now this week we're going to walk through a prayer for peace. Or specifically, a prayer for peace on earth and peace in the home. Relational peace. Because hearing from you guys, it sounds like during Christmas especially, there can be a lack of peace in many of our relationships. I'll give you a few examples of the things that people prayed from our church community. One person wrote, I pray for my two daughters. We'll all be together this Christmas and they can't stand each other. Somebody else wrote, I pray you help me with this grudge. My father still has not apologized for how he hurt me many years ago. I pray for my once best friend. He continues to lie, steal, relapse, and apologize. Lie, steal, relapse, apologize, again and again. I'm not sure how much longer I can take it, but he's living on the streets, and so I don't know what to do. I pray my wife could forgive me. My decisions put us in this position. Or how about this one? I pray for our country. There's so much outrage, so much anger, so much violence, so much division. Or can any of you identify with this one? I pray for my kids. How do you raise a child in a world like this? It just seems to be getting worse, not better. Now, I could go on and show you more prayers, but I think you get the point. Christmas is supposed to be a holiday. Christmas is supposed to be a celebration. Christmas is supposed to be joy to the world. And yet for many of us, instead, Christmas can be a sad reminder of how little peace we have in our national community and in our closest relationships. I mean, look at our country right now. It's just like a smoldering volcano, spitting fire and smoke and ash. It seems like every single week there is a new civil war over a new issue. This may be the most divided version of our country in recent history. And we're most divided along political lines. And neither side is showing any sign at all of wanting to get along with the other. Instead, we just leverage these bully schoolyard tactics to demean and belittle those people. It's interesting. Studies have shown that the left and right have pulled themselves completely apart from one another. We watch different television shows and news stations. We read different books, listen to different music, attend different churches. We celebrate national holidays and traditions in completely different ways. We don't even live with each other anymore. Did you know that? Studies have shown that the vast majority of folks on the left live in about 140 urban counties, while the vast majority of those on the right live in the suburbs and in rural areas. And so we wonder, why in the world won't those people listen to me? Why won't they come around? Why can't they just understand? Well, it's because you're not doing life with any of those people. Now, for others of us in this room, the unrest and lack of peace we're experiencing this Christmas is way more personal than political, because you have a broken family relationship, or you hurt one of your friends, and there's some chaos and conflict therein. And Christmas can be especially hard for that. In fact, I found that Christmas magnifies and intensifies those broken, close relationships because you get put in the same room as them. Right? You get put around the same dinner table as them. And you got one or two options. You can either ignore it and it gets really, really awkward, or you can address it, but usually addressing it just means tick, tick, boom, and it gets ugly fast. Christmas just complicates family stuff, doesn't it? For some of you, this Christmas, you'll be with your family, and you'll be reminded of how little love you've gotten from your family. I saw this recently. There's this unique species of birds on the Galapagos Islands called the Sulo Grande. And basically what the parent birds do is they lay two eggs, but they only raise one. So when the second chick is hatched, the first chick, which is usually a day or two old at that point, pushes the second chick out of the nest. And the parents just watch it. I kid you not, naturalists call this the Cain and Abel syndrome. And it's because the second-born chick is disposable. The second-born is discardable. Now, are there any second-born children in this room? I'm not a second born. I am the fourth born, the last born of four. And my parents stopped with me because they finally got it right. Tell my sisters that all the time. My parents told me that at a very young age. I didn't tell them, but they told me, so I tell my sisters. But seriously, though, first born, second born, third born, last born, doesn't matter. Some of you, Christmas is just a reminder of the love you wish you always receive from your family. For others of you, you haven't talked to your mom or your dad in 5, 10, 15 years. Christmas is a reminder of that. For some of you, you can't be in the same room with your sister without having a knockdown, drag out, and somebody marching out of the room. Christmas is a reminder of that. For some of you, you just hate being around your uncle because as soon as you walk in, he begins to tear in about his theological views and his political views, and he's right and you're wrong, and you don't talk, I talk, and someday when you get older, you'll see things my way, the right way. And that complicates Christmas. Or how about this? Divorce complicates Christmas, and it's in so many of our lives. Mom's bringing a new man to Christmas this year, and that can be a little strange. Or she wants custody on these days, but I want custody on these days, and the fight goes back and forth. And if your parents are divorced too, then you end up like shipping your kids around to four different Christmases over 2 days. Or if you're young in this room and you got young kids, you can feel this tug of war back and forth between your parents and the in-laws because everybody wants FaceTime with you. Everybody wants FaceTime with the grandbabies. And they say they're not counting, but they are. And they're like, okay, you know, last year you were with them on the Christmas, you know, and this year you weren't with us on Thanksgiving. You gave them 3 days, but you only gave us 1 day, and we're not counting, but. Look, Christmas can just be complicated with those relationships. And if you're not careful, you'll get to the other side of Christmas having run yourself so ragged that instead of this holiday filling you with joy, it can drain you, and you start the new year on empty. It's supposed to be the most wonderful time of the year, right? But is it? Is it really? And see, that is exactly why I think it is so important, especially during December, for you to show up at church and for you to gather with your people and sing the songs and hear the stories and practice the traditions, light the candles, and remind yourself of the true reason of the season. Because see, while Christmas can be a sad reminder of how little peace we have, Christmas can also be the ultimate reminder of exactly where our peace can be found. You know, I think it's really neat. Every year, our preschool ministry across the street, and it is a ministry, they are ministering and laying an important foundation into the lives of our young people. Our preschool ministry during Christmas gives every family a Happy Birthday Jesus kit. You get a box cake. You get some icing with sprinkles, and this is like Funfetti Vanilla Pillsbury. It's not cheap stuff. It's good. Trust me. And you get a little Happy Birthday Jesus candle set. I think that's such a good idea. Palmer brought one home last year. We baked the cake together, iced the cake together, put the sprinkles on, put the candles in, and we sang Happy Birthday to Jesus. And it was one of my favorite experiences with him. Last Christmas. Now, you may not think my kid is as cute as I do, but I'm the one with the microphone today, so you know I gotta show you a video, so check this out.
1, 2, 3. Happy birthday, dear. Happy birthday, dear.
Baby Jesus.
Happy birthday.
Baby Jesus.
Happy birthday to
Baby Jesus.
Good job. Let's blow out the candles for him. Blow hard. Now, I kid you not, for the next 10 days, every night, we had to light candles and sing Happy Birthday to Jesus. After day 3, we ran out of cake, so we were putting candles in donuts, mashed potatoes, didn't matter. Right? We just had to sing to him. And it was so neat to see Palmer start connecting the dots around the reason for the season. And it was a powerful reminder every single night for Lindsay and I of why we celebrate the season. Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6. For a child has been born for us, a son given to us. An authority rests upon his shoulders. And he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His authority shall grow continually, and there will be endless peace for the throne of David and his kingdom. He will establish and uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time onward and forevermore. Now, there are a few things I want to point out to you about this prophetic Christmas passage. The first one is this. According to this passage, peace is personified. Peace is personified. Peace is not a power. Peace is not a principle. Peace is not a list of practices in order to establish inner peace mystically inside of you. No, peace is a person. Peace came. Peace has a name. And his name is Jesus. Second, this passage points out that peace is a prince. Jesus is the only begotten son, right? Which means he's royal, which means he is a ruler. And he has a kingdom that establishes peace. But the only way you will experience that peace is if you choose to step into his kingdom. In layman's terms, I believe that peace can be found at the overlap of your heart and Jesus' reign. Every ounce and inch of your heart you give to him, he will begin to establish that peace. Therein. Now, third and fourth, I want you to notice that this passage points out that peace is not perfected, but peace is progressing, person by person by person by person. It says his authority shall grow continually, right? It will progress. And there shall be, like one day, there shall be endless peace. Now, it doesn't take long to look around the world and realize that universal peace has not yet been established. And that's because every human heart has not yet internalized the peace of Jesus. You realize that we are the cause of all the chaos in our world, right? It starts with us. Every expression of violence, every expression of injustice and war, every expression of selfishness or bitterness or dishonesty that breaks up relationships begins on the inside and then is expressed on the outside. See, that's why I love Jesus' kingdom so much, because Jesus is not concerned with conquering land, but rather he's concerned with conquering the human heart. He understands that the war that will end all wars will not be won with missiles or guns. It will not be decided by politicians in a conference room. No, it will be decided one human heart at a time. And so his kingdom continues to progress, one man, one woman at a time. Which brings me to my fifth point about this passage that I don't want you to miss. And that is this: peace is only in the Prince. It's only found there. And that's why for some of you, your soul continues to rage on the inside, because you're looking everywhere else for peace. Let me go ahead and tell you, there is no amount of money or power that will ever bring you lasting peace. Keep looking at external forces to establish peace. Let me tell you, medicine, technology, political power, it will not bring peace. You see, there's nothing wrong with any of those things. They're morally neutral. At the end of the day, though, medicine, technology, political power will be either wielded for good or evil, depending on the human heart that wields it. And that's why Jesus goes after the heart, because peace established on the inside will express itself on the outside. One of the most amazing declarations of peace in all the scriptures comes in Luke chapter 2, verse 8. Scriptures say, that night there were shepherds staying in the fields nearby, guarding their flocks of sheep. And suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared among them, and the radiance of the Lord's glory surrounded them. And they were terrified. I mean, they should be, right? But the angel reassured them, "Don't be afraid, don't be afraid. I bring you good news that will bring great joy to all the people." The Savior, yes, the Messiah, the Christ, the Lord, has been born today in Bethlehem, the city of David. And you will recognize him by this sign. You'll find a baby wrapped snugly in strips of cloth, lying in a manger. And then suddenly, the angel was joined by a vast host of others, the armies of heaven, praising God and saying, "Glory to God, glory, glory to God in the highest heaven, and peace on earth to those with whom God is pleased." Now, I love the last line, this declaration of peace, and this passage. See, most people love it because from a human perspective, it says peace is being established for us. But I love looking at this last line from the divine perspective, because do you see what it says? It says glory is brought to God in the highest heaven, not in the lowest heaven, not in the middle heaven, not on like floor 5 or 7, you know, or 8 of heaven. The highest heaven. In the highest heaven, God has brought joy and glory and praise for giving us peace. And what a great God that is. See, we don't deserve that peace, and yet he gives it. You and I don't deserve that peace. I don't, you don't, and yet it still brings him glory and joy to provide it. I said it earlier, we're the enemy. We're the rebel against peace. We're the cause of the injustice. We're the cause of the war. We're the cause of the violence. We're the cause of the selfishness and dishonesty and vengeance that undermines our relationship. We are the rebel, and yet that's what makes our God so different. Instead of establishing peace by wiping out his enemies, he establishes peace by welcoming his enemies into peace. I don't deserve such a gracious God like that. Think about us. I mean, how in the world is it the case that we can put a Land Rover on Mars, but we cannot solve the problem of world hunger? How is it possible that we can innovate these cell phones with apps on them that can solve any problem, but we can't solve the problem of human trafficking and slavery? How is it possible that we can take engineering and chemistry and combine them together to create weapons of mass destruction that level entire cities, but we can't provide clean water to every city and every community around the world? Well, perhaps it's because we focus our energy and resources on things that benefit us, and we ignore that which doesn't. I mean, it is just simply a fact that right now, on this day, there are people shivering outside, downtown, near to death, in the cold. You've probably passed some of them under a bridge. It is just simply a fact that right now, there are hundreds of kids in this city that are going on day two of hunger because they don't eat during the weekends. A couple hundred of those kids were in our room yesterday, right here where you guys were sitting, because we hosted our Love the Ville Christmas party. And all of our partner schools, the family resource directors, just sends us all the kids that don't have Christmas, and we send them home with 8 or 9 gifts, a ham, and the love of Jesus. And it was so cool to spend time with them. But I hosted a table right over here on the side of the room, and about 7 boys were at my table. They were the wildest boys in the room, which is like kind of like God's divine justice, you know. But they came over to my table. And you want to know the first thing they wanted to do? Eat. Can we eat our sandwiches now? Well, no, it's not time to eat our sandwich yet, but we're hungry. Okay, eat your sandwich, you know. And I know that there are hundreds of kids who left that party yesterday terrified of Christmas break. Your kids rejoice in it. They're terrified of it because for 2 weeks, they don't know where their next meal's coming from. Now, how is it possible for us to know those are realities in our city and then walk away today unchanged? Go out and spend thousands of dollars on junk for people who don't even need junk, who don't need anything this Christmas. We do not deserve God's peace. It frustrates me so much. Christians, we should never raise our fist at God and say, "Why do you allow all this suffering in the world?" until every Christian has made every resource available to God to bring peace to the world. And yet we do not deserve the peace of our great God. I don't, you don't either. And yet he provides it anyways. He sends Jesus as the missing piece in our heart. Now, you know what makes me even sadder than that? What makes me even more sad is there are hundreds upon thousands of people in our country today who have chosen to live a life without God. And if you choose a without God worldview, there really is no basis at all for peace on earth. You'll never have true peace. I mean, think about it. Your worldview says that we come from a random, accidental chance explosion, which means you are not unique, you are not special, you have no purpose, there is no meaning, no future, you'll leave no legacy. You're just a random collection of atoms that sort of exploded accidentally into what they are. And one day the world's gonna implode or explode into billions of different pieces, and no one's gonna remember anything anyone ever did. And 100 billion years from now, our little planet will just be a blip on the radar screen of the universe that no one is watching. Merry Christmas. R.I.P. is often written on tombstones. Rest in peace. And it just saddens me to think that for many folks, their first and only hope for true peace is after they take their last breath. Death, non-existence, is their only hope for peace. Look, there is a better hope. There is a Prince of Peace, and he wants to be the missing piece in your heart. Now, you want to know what my favorite thing is about Jesus' peace that he offers? It's not a passive peace. It's an active peace. When it comes on the inside, it begins to change you and express itself on the outside. There is no such thing as inner peace that is not expressed externally. We're peace takers from Jesus, but then he transforms us into peacemakers, into an army of ambassadors, agents of peace in the world. And what an amazing, amazing calling that is. So let me get even more practical for you today. Those of you who call yourself peacemakers in the room today, do you know what peacemakers pray? Peacemakers of Jesus? When they step into the chaos and they step into the unrest of the relationships that I know you will be confronted with this Christmas, when they step into situations that lack peace, they pray this: God help me, not God make them. Now, do you get the difference? You see the difference between the two? So you know what God make them is? God make them is blame. God make them is tempting. God make them is easy because it pushes the responsibility of peace on someone else. But God make them is not the prayer of a peacemaker. God make them is just blaming our responsibility away. And you know what blame is good for? Really only one thing. The only thing blame makes better is how you feel for about 10 seconds after you do it. But it changes nothing. Same thing for unforgiveness. The only thing unforgiveness is good for is how it makes you feel about 10 seconds after you do it, but it changes nothing. Same thing for gossip. The only thing gossip makes better is how you feel for about 10 seconds, but it changes nothing. Same thing for hate. The only thing hate makes better is how you feel for about 10 seconds after you do it, but it changes nothing. Same thing for spite. The only thing spite makes better is how you feel for about 10 seconds, but it changes nothing. Same thing for passive aggressiveness. Only thing it makes better is how you feel for about 10 seconds, but it changes nothing. Same thing for vengeance. The only thing it makes better is how you feel for 10 seconds, but vengeance changes nothing. And the same thing for avoidance. The only thing it makes better is how you feel for about 10 seconds, but avoidance changes nothing. In fact, all of that, which I just listed through, usually makes matters worse, not better. So for those of you in here who want to change something, who want to bring peace into your lives and into your relationships, I would suggest to you a better prayer. God help me, rather than God make them. I'll give you a few examples of some God help me prayers. How about this one? God help me own whatever I can own this Christmas in this conflict. Now, I believe in every single conflict, both parties own something. And even if you don't own much, even if you only own like 1% of the relational pie, 1% of the solution, you need to own that. Even if the only thing you own is accepting an apology or extending forgiveness, you need to take ownership of what you can and extend peace where you can. You know what the Christian says? The Christian says, I may not be able to solve the whole problem, but the whole problem cannot be solved without me. And so you bring peace. Here's another one. God, help me listen and learn. God, help me listen and learn. And that is so hard when you're confronted with difficult people, right? But it's a powerful prayer. This Thanksgiving, I saw this turkey right here floating around on Twitter. And you and I can learn a lot from this turkey about civil discussion and dialogue with those who are difficult and disagree with us. So this is what it looks like to practice civility. You say things like, I'd love to hear your take on this. I wonder if, how do you see it? Well, you make a good point. Or my initial reaction to that is, see, every single one of these feathers expresses a posture of patience, a willingness to listen and learn. And I've just found that when you express a posture like that, oftentimes people will reciprocate it in return. Here's another one. God help me meet hate with love. Meet hate with love. You know there is no peace in hate, right? Hate only breeds hate. If you meet hate with more hate, it's just like throwing gas on the fire. In 2015, a French man named Antoine Larisse lost his wife in one of the terrorist attacks, the one that was on the Bataclan Theater. 88 people were killed. A couple days after the terrorist attack, he wrote this on Facebook to the murderers who took his wife's life. It's a powerful testimony to this. He wrote, on Friday night, you stole the life of an exceptional being, the love of my life, the mother of my son, but you will not have my hate. I will not give you the satisfaction of hating you. That's what you want. But to respond to your hate with anger would be to yield to the same ignorance that made you what you are. You want me to be scared, to see my fellow citizens through suspicious eyes, to sacrifice my freedom for security. Well, you have failed. There are only two of us now, my son and myself, but we are stronger than all the armies of the world. Melville's waking up from his nap. He's only 17 months old, but he will eat his snack as he does every single day. And then he will play as we do every single day. And his life, all his life, this little boy will defy you by being happy and free, because you will not have his hate either. Wow. Which brings me to another powerful God help me. God, help me transform my anger into good. See, anger is a powerful emotion, right? If you hold on to it, it will exhaust you, keep you up at night. If you internalize it, it'll steal your joy. If you express it in the wrong way, then it'll make you hateful or vengeful or lead you to say things about people or use labels for people that are dehumanizing and wrong. But if you transform your anger, it can be a powerful energy. It can transform into the courage to speak truth and love. It can transform into the compassion to forgive boldly. It can transform into the energy to bring peace where there is no peace. So transform it into something life-giving. That's what a peacemaker does. How about this next one? God, help me be gracious and unassuming. Help me to be gracious and unassuming. I have found that a lot of times in emotionally charged situations, people say what they don't mean. People do what they don't mean. I tell my wife, I tell my kids, I tell my staff sometime, look, listen to what I mean, not what I say. And that's because a lot of times I say and do things that I don't mean. This is why a lot of times you'll come back or your friends will come back after an argument and they'll apologize and say, what I really meant was, or what I really wished I'd have said was. So give people the benefit of the doubt. It's an exercise in love. How about this next one? This is so important. God, help me choose presence over avoidance. Presence over avoidance. And notice how presence is spelt there, y'all. Presence. Can we just vow together to be a church family this year that does not hide from the conversations we need to have behind the screen of a phone? Can we just vow together to make sure that giving others our presence is more important than giving presents? $7.9 billion was spent on Cyber Monday this year on stuff we don't need for people we don't like, man. I mean, it's just, it's nuts. And you know what I found as I get older and older? The gifts that I really cherish are time spent together, memories made, adventures gone on with the ones I love the most. It's interesting. 5 or 6 years ago, Lindsay and I spent Thanksgiving with some of her friends in her hometown, and we decided to go out on Black Friday to Walmart. And it was a madhouse. Like, people were just going nuts, fighting over stuff. And so instead of buying any gifts, we decided to play a game. Me and two of my buddies decided to see who could sneak the largest item on a stranger's cart without them noticing. And it was a blast. It was fun to see my buddy get an entire Justin Bieber DVD set in an elderly lady's cart. It was even more fun to watch her check out, very confused, like, you know, I didn't. I came in second. I got a life-size Barbie with an accompanying tea set into someone's cart. I mean, like, those are pretty big. But my friend took home the cake because he put an adult pogo stick. I kid you not, an adult pogo stick into somebody's cart and they did not notice for minutes upon minutes upon minutes. That's how you know you got too much stuff, right? Now, the reason why I tell you this story is not to give you any advice about what you should be doing this Christmas, because that is not what you should be doing. The reason why I tell you this story is because you know what I remember about 5 Christmases ago? Not any presents that I received. Not even any presents that I gave. I remember this time where me and a few of my buddies went to Walmart. And we probably broke the law. But it was the presents, the time spent together, that brought us so much joy and laughter. Last one. And this one may be the hardest one. I saved it for last for a reason. Some of you this Christmas need to pray, God, help me to forgive. Not make them, but help me to forgive. Even if they don't deserve it. Even if they haven't asked for it. You've probably heard it before, but harboring unforgiveness is like drinking poison and expecting someone else to get sick. It doesn't work like that. I saw this post recently on the Instagram page of the founder of our partner, Scarlet Hope. She threw this picture up and she wrote this underneath. She said, "This is my friend Mary. We met 10 years ago. Mary was a very young girl when she was trafficked, sold, and abused by a man that had no regard for her life. We met her through Scarlet Hope and have journeyed with her through the years, and today marks a day of freedom. The ashes of her trafficker were given to her by his family. She didn't want them or ask for them. Rather, it was a way for the bondage of the past to keep her captive. But today, those ashes were thrown into the depths of the river as she forgave the man who wounded her and held her captive. She is free. And she is, because that's what forgiveness does. You know what my favorite line in the Christmas carols that we sing is? It comes from the song we sang earlier, right before the sermon, O Holy Night. Lyric goes like this, a thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. So fall on your knees, hear the angel voices, O night divine, O night when Christ was born. Now, do you hear the story that the song is telling at this point? It's telling his story, history, what happened with Jesus. But then it makes a shift from his story to our story. And it says, truly, truly, he taught us to love one another. His law is love, and his gospel is peace. From peace takers to peacemakers. In Luke chapter 1, not only does it tell the story of Jesus' birth, but it also tells the story of John the Baptist's birth, his cousin and his forerunner, his prophetic forerunner. And John the Baptist's dad sings this about the birth of his son and the birth of Jesus. So powerful. He says, you, my little son, John, will be called the prophet of the Most High because you'll prepare the way for the Lord. You'll tell his people how to find salvation through the forgiveness of their sins. And then I love this next passage. It says, because of God's tender mercy, the morning light from heaven is about to break upon us to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death and to guide us to the path of peace. You see, I think it's no coincidence that Matthew's Christmas story begins with this glorious declaration, Emmanuel, look, God is with us. And then his story ends in chapter 28 with this glorious challenge. Go, and I'll be with you. So church, as we walk into the chaos of Christmas, let us not forget the source of our peace. Look, God is with us. But let us not forget this challenge of peace as well. Go, I'll be with you. Will you stand? And let's sing this lyric together as our closing prayer.
Truly he taught us to love one another. His law is love and his gospel is peace. Chain shall he break, for the slave is a brother, and in his name all the oppression shall cease. Sweet hymns of joy in grateful chorus raise, we let all within us his holy name. Christ is Lord. Oh, praise his name forever. His power and glory.
Father, as we walk into the chaos that Christmas can bring, refresh our hearts with the peace that you give, the peace that we do not deserve, but the peace that you graciously give. and transform us into peacemakers, from peace receivers to peace givers. It is in Jesus' name that we pray. Amen. Well, hey, thank you for being here today. I'll remind you of all things Christmas Eve. Invite a friend to the service, give to our Eve offering, and help us serve him. If you're a first-timer here, I'd love to meet you today. So I'm going to walk back to our information kiosk and love to shake your hand there. And if you need prayer or to respond to this service, we'll meet you in the fireside room afterwards. Have a great week. Merry Christmas.